Of course, there are among the ranks of commerce many adventurers. Many people are in it for something they can get out of it. These people don't measure the real strength then of commerce, but it's in this other group who, whether mistakenly or not mistakenly, have committed their life to an object which they think is worthy to devote their life to. Then what about its menace? I want to mention three things in the menace part. I think, as I sense the situations in the Western part of the world, we have focused too much of our thinking on the fact that the threat of communism is the threat of a socialistic organization against capitalism. Friends, I think that is not the right way of sensing the menace of communism to our way of life. Why do I say that? Now, when I look at England and Russia today, England economically, in its organization now, has a good deal of what Russia economically has been trying to do. You know, England has gone in for a certain degree of socialism. And so in that respect, England and Russia are not too different, economically speaking. And yet, there is a very vital difference between the English situation and the Russian situation, although they are very similar in economic situation. And the vital difference is simply this, that in Russia, the people of Russia have no freedom to say whether they want this kind of life or not. In England, the people still have the freedom to say whether they want to keep this kind of life or throw it out. You see, the main threat is not in economic life. Because after all, I can live under socialism, economically, as well as capitalism. It won't make too much difference to me. Because in socialism, you have to do planning. In capitalism, you do have to do planning. In capitalism, you plan privately, private enterprise. In socialism, you plan publicly. But both planning still has to be done under a system of laws, under a structure of laws. Who then make the laws that control the planning, whether private or public? Who elect the people who draw up those laws and legislations to control that kind of planning? You see, England hasn't lost out in its democracy. And therefore, they are still master of their economic life. Russia, they have lost out in democracy. And therefore, their masters can foist upon Russia any kind of economic system, and the people would have no redress whatever. You see the menace? Not merely in economics, but the real challenge today from communism is from a dictatorial kind of government over against what we call the democratic form of government. In order to have that kind of dictatorial powers, the communists have proclaimed two kinds of dictatorships. One, the dictatorship of the party over the proletariat. Communism originally is supposed to be a movement of liberation, emancipation of the proletariat. But after you liberated them from other controls, the proletariat comes under the absolute dictatorship of the party. You can vote only in the way they want you to vote. No other party is allowed to exist. And so you have only one set of votes, one set of candidates. If you vote yes, the whole thing goes in. If you vote no, a vacuum. If I go back to China, the communists say that, yes, you can vote. Yes, I can vote, but I have no choice in my votes. In other words, they dictate to you how you're to vote and for whom you should vote. Now, you have two-party system here, Democrats and Republicans. Now, do the parties ever attempt to dictate to you how you should vote? If anyone actually tries to dictate to you, any one of these parties, tell you now, you as a Democrat, you must vote this way. Well, if I know your temper at all as a people, you probably just to be honorary, you vote for the exactly the other. But then, friends, don't you see, you still have the opportunity and the luxury of voting just the other thing. You see, you're free that way. And as long as you're free that way, nobody can fasten any system on you. They can do it, even if they do it, they can do it only for one term. But once you lose that right, anybody can fasten anything on you, whether you like it or not, and you have no redress. You see the menace? Not just in economics. It's whether you retain the initiative, the freedom, as a people, in a popular democracy, or whether you lose that to the dictatorship of the party. And the second dictatorship is the dictatorship of the state over society. Here in democratic America, the key of society is the individual. And society is a group of functions that ministers to the life of the individual. One function, religion. Another function, education. Art, music, sports, and among these social functions, government. One of several social functions. All minister to the life of the individual. What Russia has done, or what the communists have done, they take this one function of many functions, the government, and made it co-equal with all society, so that society comes under the dictation of the state. So if you happen to be an artist here, and don't paint the kind of painting that the government wants you to paint, you can be disciplined. If you're a musician and don't sing the kind of songs they want you to sing, you can be disciplined. And my daughter happens to be a violinist. And they've asked her to give some concerts. And she said, I have to play things that I ordinarily, as a violinist, would never think of playing. But if you don't, disciplined. You see, the state is absent over every function of society. Once you allow that thing to happen, then your democracy begins to go out of the window again. And so, through those two forms of dictatorships, which was not originally in communism, they fastened a system upon human life that to me perhaps can most aptly be described by what the Bible says, that Esau sold his birthright for a mess of pottage. Then the other menace I want to mention is the conflict in the concept of world unity. Again, as I study the Western side of life and in your attitudes towards the communistic world, it seems to me that the Western peoples have somehow either ignored or underestimated this program of world revolution of communism. I have known in China, 10 years before the Second World War happened, 10 years before that, I was reading the speeches of Chinese communists, reading their writings, and so on. And they were then openly speaking of the coming Second World War as one of the occasions that will open to the communists the big chance for the spread of their world communism revolution. So the many lands that at that time were not communist would become communist through the Second World War. 10 years before the Second World War happened. Now they're talking of the Third World War already as communists. Because through the upset of a war and through the misery and frustration of a war, they would open many lands to communist propaganda and final domination. That is why when we think on our side of life, we are working for a one world also, but through a different method. Thing like the United Nations. And if you put the World Revolution Communists, you see the principle involved. Through their program, they're trying to create a world unity by stressing or demanding or imposing uniformity, which is the technique of all conquerors in history. In this new thing that the United Nations is trying to express, we're trying to approach world unity and cooperation through harmonizing differences and yet work together. And it's those two issues that are ranged one against the other. But friends, when we look at those two issues, let us take another lesson from the leaf of history. And that is, no attempt that is based on the imposition of uniformity has ever succeeded yet in history. The other kind of thing may be slow, may appear ineffective at the moment, like the United Nations type of thing. Yet I think in the United Nations type of thing, you have the real genius of human life in working, feeling for a form of unity that doesn't demand uniformity, and tolerate differences and work together. And I think the thing that's true to human life and human nature is in this thing we have, not in the other demand of a world revolution of the communist type we'll have. And so even as you look at the present situation, black as it might seem, as far as the fortune of war are concerned, have we the courage, the insight, to believe and to have faith in saying that our idea of world unity is the one that is in line with the purpose of God for human life? I think that's what the situation today is making clear to us, saying to us. And I think how we answer that question will decide or determine for you or for me whether I am a pessimist or a man who still dares to hope.